and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We're halfway through the show here, boys. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys at keenerjerseys.com. Let's hit the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports. How's it going, Pete?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We're going to go over the NHL with you. We're going to start off, we were just talking about Olympic participation. What are your thoughts on participation in the Olympics and how bad you think that the NHL needs to be in South Korea in 2018?
I want to see the players there. I think most hockey fans want to see the best available talent go to the games. I'm not sure if it's going to happen, and I'm not sure if the NHL necessarily needs to go there. I don't think that they want to go to South Korea, and I don't know. I think that the product could still be enjoyable. Like, I mean, I always enjoy the World Junior Championships every year, and I think that it'd be interesting for a hockey fan to see what the teams look like if they can't send NHL players. But I think that for the sake of, the best possible product, obviously you want the NHL players there. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Pete, recently Craig Cunningham made a significant video that, kind of went viral yesterday or the day before, of him walking after having his leg amputated. You know, he was scheduled to play in that Tucson Roadrunners game against the Manitoba Moose, which is a team from Winnipeg, obviously, and that game got postponed with what happened to him. And in his recovery, especially considering how dire his circumstances were, how amazing is his story right now?
It's unbelievable. I posted the video either yesterday or Thursday, I was doing a little more research, and I was reading all the stuff that's been written about him, and I didn't realize that his heart stopped for 2 days. Before the doctors got it back and eventually made a full recovery, and that's incredible. And just the turnaround and seeing how high his spirits have remained, and the positive outlook that he's had on it, even though his playing career is done, and have it taken from you in that kind of fashion is it's terrible and it's devastating. And just to see the way that he's handled it and the progress that he's made in such a short amount of time is really, really amazing.
Pete, you're based out of Boston. I'm just curious, how's our boy Drew Stafford doing thus far on the Bruins, and how was that that trade perceived on your guy's end?
He's looked great so far. It wasn't the most exciting deadline pickup, but he's forced Jimmy Hayes out of the lineup for a few games, and that's always a plus for people around here. So the bar was set very low in terms of, whether his production would be an improvement. And he's basically already surpassed that bar. So it's been a nice addition, a low-cost rental. So, I think most people around here are very pleased with what they've seen from Stafford so far.
We're joined by Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Pete, I want to ask you about the Arizona Coyotes, even though we said on this show that we weren't ever going to talk about the Arizona Coyotes ownership situation, but we're going to ask you about the arena situation. Basically, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman came out this week and said that the Coyotes cannot play in Glendale anymore, which I guess means that arena is going to be even more empty than it has been already. What do you think the future of the Arizona Coyotes is in the state of Arizona?
Honestly, at this point, it's approaching make or break. They either have to find... I thought that the deal that they had with Arizona State would really help them out if they shared that arena and that facility, and, that ended up not working out. I really don't know if they're going to be able to get an arena in the East Valley, and I think that's obviously what they need, and that's what Bettman wants, and I don't know if the state's going to pay for it. So I think that Bettman wants them to stay in Arizona really, really badly. It sounds like, you know, he's trying to exhaust every possible option that he has before seeking relocation. But I don't know. They're going to have to get really creative if they want to stay there. And I don't know if it's going to happen. Personally, I'd like to see them go to Seattle. That's something that's really intriguing to me. And you know, it's clear that the way that they've been proceeding in Arizona just isn't working out, and it's not viable for them to stay there until they find a permanent home, and a permanent home that makes a lot of sense, and they can't do that right now.
Pete, is there a dumber controversy in the NHL than Josh Hosang's choice of the number 66?
Absolutely not.
I mean, obviously you understand my side of it when I say dumber situation, because it's just like, it seems unbelievable that this is a, quote, controversy.
It's insane. I said it right from the get-go. It's, if you don't want a guy wearing that number, then you have to retire it league-wide. If you don't retire it league-wide, guys can wear whatever the hell numbers they want. So, to make a big stink about Hosang wearing number 66 when... I can understand if it was in Pittsburgh and they hadn't retired it, and, you know, obviously Lemieux is a huge part of that city, and obviously they retired it there. But like, just for the Islanders, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it's, you know, the fact that people keep asking him about it, I just, you know, it's like you said, there's no dumber controversy in the NHL right now.
Pete, here in Winnipeg, a hot topic issue has been fighting in hockey lately, just with regards to what happened between the Pens and the Jets over the last couple games. I'm just curious, from your perspective, where do you stand on guys dropping the gloves on the ice right now?
I think that, you know, it has its place right now. I don't like staged fights. I don't like, right off the face-off and those kind of things. And I don't like when guys feel the need to fight after every big clean hit. That's something that infuriates me. But I do think that it has a place in the game in terms of, you know, on-ice policing, and I think that most players probably don't want it taken out for that purpose. But I also don't need it. I'm a person that really enjoys the international game, and, you know, when I watch the Olympics and I watch the World Junior Championships, I don't sit there and I don't say, oh, man, I really miss a fight right now. It all depends on what the quality of product is in terms of play. And if the play is good enough, then you don't need the fighting. But I do think that it has a place. And I do think that, you know, there's a certain section of hockey fans that will be turned off and be really upset if they take fighting out of the game. And that's understandable. But I think that the league – and, you know, the sport in general has a responsibility to take care of its players and to ensure that they're in the best possible position for quality of life after they stop playing the game. So it's a really difficult position, and I don't think that there's any true clear-cut answer.
We're joined by Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Pete, when you look at the playoff races going on in the Eastern Conference right now, Boston is pretty secure in being in a playoff spot right now, but you have the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs competing with the New York Islanders for that final playoff spot. But then Tampa Bay the other night had a rash of injuries. How do you see the playoff races playing out in the Eastern Conference?
It's really tight in the wild card section. So I don't know. Obviously, Tampa Bay lost a few pieces at the deadline, and then they lost a couple pieces the other night. So they're going to have a really tough road. And so I don't know. I think Toronto might sneak in, but, you know, it's really impossible to predict at this point. The playoff matchups, though, in the first round should be really, really intriguing. And there's a lot of parity in the East right now, and it's going to be fun to watch down the stretch.
Pete, you know, it's not quite the same level as the NHL, but just south of us, there's a tournament happening in Minnesota that, you know, in the land of 10,000 lakes, everybody's very excited about. Now, what gets us more excited, and I noticed you recently posted it, is the State of Hockey Hair videos, which, you know, are always hilarious. I saw that you posted on Fox Sports that apparently the tournament organizers might not be in love with those videos. But, I mean, are they just missing out on an opportunity that, you know, helps kind of make the game more fun and get people more interested?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a big reason that a lot of fans know about the Minnesota High School Hockey Tournament outside of Minnesota is because of the Hockey Hair thing, and that helps show how big of a deal it is for everybody else around the country who doesn't, you know, experience it in the direct vicinity. So, I mean, I do think that it's really good for the tournament. The tournament organizers said that they were worried that it distracts players from the games, and, you know, they don't. They basically wanted the coverage of the tournament to be about, you know, the sport and the games, and that's understandable, I guess, but at the same time, this is a really fun thing that brings a ton of exposure to the tournament. The players obviously enjoy it, and, you know, after the introductions, I'm sure it doesn't really take away from the focus on the ice, and I'm sure that all those kids want to win. So I do think that it's a really, really good thing for that tournament. And, you know, and also, like, a big underreported part of those videos and the hair thing is that for the past few years, it's raised money for, I think it's the Hendricks Foundation or something like that, that provides money and financial support to veterans who want to keep playing hockey.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Pete, curious, just scrolling through your Twitter account, you had the privilege of taking the Wunderlich test at the NFL Scouting Combine. I'm curious how your results turned out and, you know, what that whole experience was like.
Not fantastic. I'm not a math whiz, and there was a lot more math on that test than I was comfortable with, especially without a calculator. So it's been a number of years and before I was forced to do math without a calculator, and I ended up not doing super well on the math portions. So I'm not going to, from here on out, I'm not going to judge any NFL prospects if they don't do super well on the Wunderlich test.
Pete, final question for you here. The Pittsburgh Penguins played the Edmonton Oilers last night, so you had Sidney Crosby versus Connor McDavid. With the Hart Trophy race that we have this year, and you've got Brent Burns also, who many think should get some votes for the Hart Trophy. I believe he's third in the NHL in scoring right now. Just how fun is it going to be to watch these guys the last 15 or so games of the season? And right now, who would you give it to?
Yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. You know, I think that they said that this year is, that the point total is going to be, you know, the lowest in a while, but it seems like there's more guys now closer together than usual. And it's right now, I think I'd give it to Burns just because what he's doing in San Jose is unbelievable and kind of, you know, it's very rare to see that from a defenseman. And, he's been top notch and he's so much fun to watch and a great all around player. But yeah, I mean, down the stretch, I mean, you've got six guys that are 70 points and above right now, and, you know, any of them could take it home. But I do think that it's going to come down to McDavid and Burns and probably Crosby. I think you could maybe throw Marchand in there, but that's probably a bias on my part. And then, you know, I think that Crosby is a really, you know, is a very tempting case because, you know, he's played less games and, you know, he's still up there in points. And so, you know, for me, it would probably come down to Crosby and Burns. So we'll have to see where those two are at the end of the season. But make no mistake, McDavid is a phenomenal player.
Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Pete, take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all of your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. I want to spend a little time right now, guys, talking about the Ottawa Senators. They've won five games in a row. They're right behind the Montreal Canadiens for the Atlantic Division lead. It's been a very interesting team this year, and you know, we don't see the Ottawa Senators that much, obviously, but I want to get your guys' take on the Senators and whether or not you think they're Stanley Cup contenders or you think they're just playing well right now and maybe they're going to be a team that you know, doesn't go as far as we think in the playoffs.
Yeah, we were talking about the Flames earlier. You want to talk about a team trending in the right direction. Ottawa Senators, they bring in Guy Boucher as their head coach, and all of a sudden the team is playing far superior defense, much more tight structurally, and now as a result they've won 5 games in a row and are trending, like I was saying, straight up as they enter the postseason. And Ottawa is, it's almost like a ragtag group of guys that, like, have been assembled that didn't really work out in their first or second teams, and then they come together in our nation's capital, and they're led by one of the most entertaining players in the league to watch, Erik Karlsson, who you listen to Guy Boucher talk about Erik Karlsson. He's like a guy who finally has started dating his longtime crush, and then you ask him about it, and he just, like, gushes. He's like, oh, she's the best. She's this. She does that. She's amazing. Listening to Guy Boucher talk about Erik Karlsson, it's incredible. And yeah, the Ottawa Senators are one hot team right now.
And those 5 wins, Sean, they have been over the Colorado Avalanche, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Boston Bruins, the Dallas Stars, and the Arizona Coyotes. So not the easiest stretch of 5 games there. After tonight's game against Colorado, the Ottawa Senators are going to play the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Chicago Blackhawks, then they've got the Montreal Canadiens back-to-back, followed by Boston, Pittsburgh, and Montreal again. So the Ottawa Senators certainly have a difficult schedule coming up. They've got 82 points right now, 2 points behind the Montreal Canadiens for the last playoff spot, but they've got 2 games in hand on the Montreal Canadiens. Dave, what's your take on the Ottawa Senators?
You know, it's an interesting story. I mean, we're talking about Erik Karlsson, who we were all told is under Boucher is playing a more defensive style, yet he's still leading the Senators in points. Mm-hmm. He's 61 on the season. And he's looked really good. I've watched some of the highlights of the Senators games of late, and Carlson's looked excellent. You know, they're getting contributions from a lot of different guys. Mark Stone has 22 goals. Mike Hoffman has 20. Kyle Turris has 22. So you're seeing a lot of balance. And Bobby Ryan is having a disappointing season for them. You know, he's suffered some injury. He only has 12 goals for the team. But again, like I said, you know, they've got Zach Smith has 16. Derek Brassard has 12. So you're getting that balance. And it's much like what we're seeing with Calgary is that there are a lot of guys who are contributing. It's not one player in particular who's carrying the load for this entire team. And if he goes cold, the team goes cold. So I don't know that I necessarily have Ottawa. I mean, I remember we were talking about Ottawa either a week or two ago, and I was like, I like this team, and I think that they're, you know, they're trending in the right direction. They've definitely done that. And again, you know, it's amazing that, A, they could catch Montreal sooner, but how important is that doubleheader against that home-and-home against the Canadiens, which could result in them springboarding, ahead of the Canadiens and into first spot, which is probably not something many of us were predicting, considering the cushion that Montreal had built for itself. So I don't know that I have them as a Stanley Cup contender. I don't, in fact. But I have them as one of those dark horse teams that, you know, you never know. Again, because they play a good team game and they don't rely on one player, provided they get their strong goaltending, this is a team that could do a little bit of damage in the first round.
And, you know, we talked about it. They're only 2 points behind the Montreal Canadiens for the Atlantic Division lead. And you look at where the Boston Bruins are, they're 6 points behind the Ottawa Senators. So it looks like the Ottawa Senators, if they don't win the division, which is going to be tough because we talked about the schedule coming up is not going to be easy, but they do have 3 games coming up head-to-head against the Montreal Canadiens. So it looks like the Senators are going to be locked into either first or second. And if they do stay in second, they're going to play the Boston Bruins. So that's, you know, not the easiest first-round matchup, but at least they know that they're going to have home ice advantage whether or not they finish first or second in the Atlantic Division. And, you know, I thought there were interesting moves that they made at the trade deadline with Alex Burrows and Victor Stahlberg. Alex Burrows has been very good for the Ottawa Senators since coming over. And you look at where this Ottawa Senators team is, and they also traded Curtis Lazar at the trade deadline, and then they traded Jonathan Dolan as well. So how much pressure, Sean, do you think there is on this Ottawa Senators team to go far in the playoffs? Because we know they're going in. I mean, they made the playoffs. That's going to happen. It's not a question if they're going to make the playoffs or not, but how much pressure do you think there is? Because as we know, the Senators team has had some off-ice issues as well. They've had attendance issues there, and they don't really have that many, I would say, high-end prospects. I mean, Thomas Chabot and Colin White are good players, and they're going to have good NHL careers. Mm-hmm. Thomas Chabot could end up being a top pairing defenseman, and Colin White can certainly end up being a top six forward, even though there's a little bit of debate on that. He was really good at the World Juniors, but how much pressure do you think there is on this team to not only get into the playoffs, but, you know, win a round or two?
Yeah, there's definitely pressure, especially with in our nation's capital regarding last year when no Canadian teams made the postseason. So I think any Canadian team essentially that makes the playoffs this year has some pressure to do a little bit of damage. You were talking about the struggling fan base of the Sens. What better way to reignite a fan base than to at least make it to the second round, make an interesting second round series? There's some pressure for sure. And Erik Karlsson has has been playing better defense as of late, but
he's playing less this year, right?
Exactly. And the knock on him was that, you know, he's a little bit loose defensively in his zone, and that's obviously going to need to get shored up if they want to make any run in the playoffs. He's going to have to focus on defense. But yeah, there's tons of pressure on everybody. And I like what we talked about. You brought up Alex Burrows. He's playing with Derek Brassard right now on the top line and Mark Stone. So you talk about two guys brought in just to the organization this year, Alex Burrows, not even a month ago, and they're playing significant roles right now. Alex Burrows has 4 points in 5 games right now, so things are clicking, and when things are going well, there's definitely pressure for a team to succeed in the postseason.
Yeah, and what I find kind of interesting about this Ottawa Senators team is they're not really great in any one area mm-hmm. aside from goal, right? And that's where their strength is right now with Craig Anderson and Mike Conin. Craig Anderson, I think, should be getting more attention for the Vezina Trophy,
oh, yeah.
quite frankly, even though he's only played 29 games. He's got the .931 save percentage and an amazing record, 20 wins in 29 starts. And then Mike Conin, we know how good he's been since being acquired. He's played more games, and his numbers are good as well. So I think this Ottawa Senators team is very interesting. You know, you mentioned Derek Brassard, who was the big offseason acquisition for Mika Zibanejad. And, you know, this team at times has trouble scoring goals, and right now they have some injuries. We're not sure how long-term these injuries are, but Mark Stone's out. Kyle Turris has a bruised finger. Bobby Ryan is also out of the lineup. And Dave mentioned Bobby Ryan has struggled quite a bit this year. He's had a lot of, issues off the ice as well. So, you know, that has factored in. So, you know, the offseason acquisitions they made, it's clear that they were buyers. And this team we know can get some offense from the defense, led by Erik Karlsson. So I think it's going to be a very interesting team to watch in that Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference is so tight right now, we don't know who's really going to get that last wild card spot. The Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to take it away from the New York Islanders. And then you've got the Lightning, who have been surging as of late when we thought they were out of it. So, you know, as you said, though, it is good for a struggling hockey market, because this Ottawa Senators team, guys, has not been an elite team for a very long time. They've been one of those teams that's either not in the playoffs, or if they get in the playoffs, they're usually out in the first or second round. So we've never really seen this Ottawa Senators team go on a long run, with the exception of 2007 against the Anaheim Ducks when they went to the Stanley Cup finals, right? So not necessarily saying that this team is primed for that this year, but they have the goaltending. We know they have the star power with Erik Karlsson. So if you get that secondary offense, and then maybe you get an upset in the first round, you know, I don't know if they're a team you want to play.
And you know, remember the directive that we were told before the trade deadline was, GM Pierre Dorion was told by his owner, Eugene Melnyk, you know, make the playoffs, or given the green light to make the playoffs. Mm. And they traded away Dahlin, you know, son of longtime NHLer Ulf Dahlin, to the Canucks for Burrows. You know, since Burrows has come in the lineup, they gave Burrows, I believe, as a 2-year contract. And, you know, it's they're 5-0. You know, they're getting a nice little bounce with the addition of Burrows and Stahlberg. Fans in Ottawa weren't happy that they traded away, you know, a prospect like Dahlin to Vancouver for Burrows. But, you know, they're somewhat, again, like you guys said, they haven't been an elite team for a long time. Can they make some damage? Can they do some damage? Yeah, you almost kind of want to finish in second spot, though, just so you know you're playing Boston, because it's a little, you know, disheartening if you know that you're having to play the New York Rangers in that first round. So if I was Ottawa, I'd probably be more comfortable playing the Boston Bruins than I would the New York Rangers. But it'll be an interesting run to the playoffs regardless in Ottawa.
Guys, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about fighting in the NHL. Will it eventually disappear? We're going to touch on Darren Dreger's piece. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
think we're going to have one right away.
Yep. And there go the gloves between Thorburn and Sestito. Not a lot of punches. Thorburn now coming in with a couple of rights and another. Just missed with one roundhouse right. Now Thorburn to the left. And one of those lefts landed. And now they tie each other up along the boards.
This is two big guys going at it with some big punches thrown.
Who do you think won that fight, by the way?
Thorburn.
Yeah, I thought Thorburn did. I was, you know.
The left he landed was pretty huge.
He had a couple of nice body blows, too, I thought.
Yeah, I thought Thorbs won that one. It was a good fight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Flames, 6 o'clock puck drop tonight. H&L is going to kick you off at 3 o'clock, and then Rick Ralph's going to be by with the pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place starting at 5 o'clock. Guys, I want to talk about fighting in hockey. I know both of you guys saw Darren Drager's piece, and it was an excellent piece done, and if you haven't seen it, it's available on tsn.ca. You know, fighting is a topic that we've covered many times over the course of the 8 years since we've been doing this show, and I think it's always an issue that comes up when you have multiple fights in a game, and you had that on Wednesday night between the Jets and the Penguins with Tom Sestito and Chris Thorburn dropping the gloves after Blake Wheeler and Evgeny Malkin dropped the gloves. So I want to play a clip of the piece, Darren Drager's piece on fighting in hockey, and then I want to just have basically a roundtable discussion about fighting in hockey, talking about where we think it's going and if it still has a place in today's game.
The question is, what's next for fighting in the NHL? Will it all but disappear? Will a league with a 100-year history of dropping the gloves eventually punish fighting with ejection from the game?
I believe their fighting will never be gone. It's too competitive in nature. The league would not be doing itself justice if they took fighting out of hockey. It would be tough to see if that day ever came. I don't think it will.
As we go forward and if fighting has less and less of a role, whether I'm sitting at the manager's level or I've gone and retired, it wouldn't surprise me down the road that we get to where you're ejected for fighting.
The ultimate fate of fighting in hockey may reside here in the Canadian Hockey League, the NHL's most important feeder system. With the Ontario Hockey League at the forefront, fighting has plummeted.
They've really tried to push any players who were there to fight end of the game. And in that regard, it's trickle-up economics.
Yeah, I would say it's a trickle-up effect, absolutely. We're the end result of all these development leagues pushing players through the system. They play hard, they compete, but rarely do they resort to fighting to decide situations. Scores!
Again, if you haven't seen Darren Drager's piece, definitely check it out. It's really good. And you heard a lot of people's voices there, guys. You heard Steve Ott's voice. You heard Ken Holland's voice. And when you're talking about fighting in hockey, we know that it's down. And we know that it's less and less a part of the game. We know that the goons and the stage fights are something that haven't been part of the game for quite some time now. So let's start off with going back to the Jets-Penguins game and the stage fight between Chris Thorburn and Tom Sestito. Do you like stage fights? Do fights have a place in the game in general? Should we only really be seeing fights in the game between players after something happens that shouldn't necessitate a fight?
You know what? It's a tough one. I mean, I'm not exactly a fighter, despite the fact that I grew up in the North End. So I know that North End Rick will be disappointed to hear that. But you know what? I look at fighting in the game, and sometimes I don't love it. Like, I don't love to, you know, I mean, you kind of inherently get a little excited. You don't want to admit it, but you're like, ooh, that's exciting. And even at last night's Moose game with, you know, the bloodthirsty children, I tweeted because they were yelling, fight, 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 fight. So even the kids kind of get a little bit of a kick out of it. But you know what? Do I think it has still a place in the game? I do, only in the sense that if you don't have it, if there's no policing of the game, you know, are we going to see kind of a crazy amount of stick work where guys are slashing and, you know, without sort of fear of repercussions? And that's the concern, right? So I'm not saying, you know, I don't think you need to legislate it out. I think that you do that by perhaps making the game, you change the game. So as opposed to having to change the rules, I think you just change the game, meaning like you're going to have less Chris Thorburns and more guys who, you know, play the full game and can score and can do that. The Thompson Steedos for sure. Thorburn can at least skate. And, you know, I mean, obviously he doesn't score a lot of goals, but the fact is, you know, he still can skate, you know, although he's getting towards the end of that. But the fact of the matter is that you have guys like Thompson Steedo, who, like I said, comes in for one game purely just to be a knuckle, you know, a big enforcer against. That, to me, is unnecessary. That doesn't need to be in the game. Again, do I think it needs to be legislated? No. Do I think the teams need to make conscious decisions not to do that? Yes. Do I think there need to be repercussions for the actions of doing something like that? Probably, from the league saying, like, what are you guys doing? But at the same time, I still think it has a place because, to, like, you know, from my perspective, you see what happens. You see the stick work. You see the types of things that occur in, you know, hockey when there's no fear of a bad result because you're kind of allowed to get away with things.
And these stats were mentioned in Drager's piece, 2016-2017, the current NHL regular season, 0.31 fights per game. 20 years ago, we had 0.84 fights per game, so that's a difference of 0.5 rounded off, half a fight less per game, right, Sean? Do you think we're moving towards an NHL that is going to eject players for fighting?
I do. I think that's probably your next logical step, is to increase harsher penalties when players do fight. I'm completely in agreement with Dave in the sense that the stage fights are just kind of silly. Like, everyone gets riled up, and if you're at a hockey game, regardless of the level, a fight breaks out. You don't want to admit it, but the crowd gets into it. What I do now when there's a fight in the NHL, I won't watch the fight. Like, I'll watch the fight, but what I like to do is I watch the audience in the background, because I like to see who's banging on the glass or who's like cowering in disgust. That's kind of, to me, more entertaining as to how the crowd reacts. But hockey's such an emotional game. It's so emotionally driven. It's so fast. It's so vicious. And I was listening to the Big Show yesterday, and they had the sheriff, Shane Knighty, on, and he had a really interesting point, how it's more so like ingrained in the culture of hockey as opposed to just NHL physicality. Like, you go to a rec game, you play a rec game, you see guys challenging guys to fights all the time. Knighty said that he's been in charity games where guys will drop the gloves and want to fight. So it's almost just like you have a beef with someone on the ice. Well, I can fight this guy. You know, it's allowed in hockey. So, like, to me, it's more of a culture change. And, yeah, get rid of the guys that are brought up just to drop their gloves, play like Tom Sestito, what was it, 62 seconds,
yeah,
garner 20-plus minutes in penalties, injure a guy, potentially end his career, and then he's done. So, like, to me, that's BS. Get that out of the game. You know, like, there's no need for that. When you have two guys battling, and it's building, and then eventually it just erupts, they drop the gloves, I can accept that. It's the stage fights, to me, that really, they really have to wean their way out of the game.
And the notion of players policing themselves, this isn't something new.
We've talked about this.
It's been around forever, as you've said, and it always comes up when the fighting argument is talked about, right? And to Dave's point, when you talk about fights, I mean, we know it's part of the game. And I guess you have to ask yourself, well, why would it be removed from the game if the players want it in the game? And every time a poll comes out, whether that's TSN or ESPN or whoever, it seems like players still want fighting in the game. So I think until that notion that fighting exists in the NHL because it needs to be there to protect players, until that notion is gone, I don't think we're going to see fighting disappear from the game. And if the NHL does decide to eject players from games because of fighting, I think all you're going to see is fighting go down, not necessarily completely disappear. You're just going to see these numbers continue to go down. But that's happening anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fights are down 0.5 fights per game as it is. So we're probably going to see fighting 2 or 3 years from now be maybe 0.15 or 0.2 fights per game. And as far as I'm concerned, a fight between Blake Wheeler and Evgeny Malkin is a good thing. Fans love it. It gets that kind of emotion, that maybe the energy that you haven't used out of the way, in the sense that you know that Blake Wheeler wants retribution, so he's not going to slash Evgeny Malkin in the head. They drop the gloves. What did they fight for? 10 seconds. They get that out of the way, and then you move on. So it's a good way to deal with a problem on the ice. Nobody got hurt. So I'm a proponent of fighting in hockey. I'm not a violent guy at all. I mean, I've grown up around hockey, but I think it really does have a place in the game. And the thing that anti-fighting advocates always forget to use or to acknowledge is that there are very few injuries that result from fights. So it's not like fighting is the thing that we need to take out of the game. It's the headshots. It's the hits from behind.
Yeah, and the only thing I was going to add is, and the one thing, and Pete Blackburn mentioned it when we were talking to him earlier, was the fact that the one thing I can't stand is a fight after a big hit.
That's the worst.
And I get the fact that you want to come to a teammate's defense, but the problem is it's almost like eliminated the idea of a clean check, because, you know, you have a clean check, like I'm thinking of Bufflin when he hits anybody, basically, but like, you know, the one on Stone last year, and just... You see that, and then he immediately has to answer the bell. He's got three guys on him, and I get it. They're coming to a teammate's defense. But the problem is it kills the flow of the game, because the whole idea is you have a big hit, and then you kind of, you're supposed to obviously take that emotion and kind of your team's supposed to ride it. You know, maybe a guy's out for a second, and then suddenly you got a odd man rush. And then the problem is, like, literally Bufflin like has to turn around and look and be like, okay, who's coming after me? Because I had a clean hit. And that to me is one of the way. I mean, again, you're not going to be able to legislate that, but I just wish – that was, and I understand the idea that you see a teammate down, you immediately want to kind of go to his defense and or come to his defense, I should say. But those are the ones that drive me crazy, because it's almost like, are you allowed to have a big hit in the NHL anymore?
Oh, you are. You just have to answer for it.
That's right. Exactly.
Which is not right.
What do you guys think of the argument that fighting doesn't exist in the international game and you don't see it a lot in the playoffs? So that is a reason why fighting doesn't have a place during the regular season.
I think it's valid. I mean, do we really miss fighting in the international level? Like, we talked to Pete Blackburn, and he was saying that...
By the way, Sean, sorry to cut you off. I don't necessarily agree that the best hockey takes place at the international level. I think you have the best players, but if you looked at some of those games in the 2014 Olympics, and those include the games that Canada won, those were, you could say, a little bit boring at times.
Yeah, I agree. It's more a lot of chippiness because the ice surface was it bigger in 2014? Yeah, it was. Yeah, so bigger ice surface, and you know, like it's a different style of play in the international. So NHL players may take a little bit longer to get used to it. But yeah, it's a less physical, more free flowing, fluid game, and yeah, maybe some of the bite is removed, but I think some of the skill kind of showcases a little bit more. The only thing that really bothers me with NHL fighting is the NHL has this stance now that headshots are the enemy, and rightfully so, you know, protect the brain, protect the head. Yet bare-knuckle boxing is essentially still allowed. To me, there's a little bit of an imbalance with that rationale, but, you know, they're making the rules first. The helmets couldn't come off, now visors, instigator rules. So they're putting in rules to kind of chip away at these fights, and the desire for guys, who wants to fight a guy with the potential of slicing your knuckle on his visor? So there's rules been put in place to kind of
And that
scale
was one
back.
Of the reasons why fighting was down in part, and that was mentioned by Darren Draper,
exactly.
And there's a host of reasons, guys. I mean, the salary cap is also a huge reason now, and you just don't see enforcers on as many teams. Pittsburgh didn't have one last year, and they won the Stanley Cup. So I think it's always interesting to talk about fighting in hockey. I don't think it's going anywhere, but there are certainly a lot of people out there that don't think it has a place in the game, and those people are entitled to their opinion.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely.
I like what Ray Shiro said in that piece. He goes, we're not developing fighters, we're developing hockey players. And to me, that's a really telling statement as the direction these guys kind of want to move the game in and with regards to fighting.
Guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go over the NHL's all-underrated team. Rob Volman came out with his underrated team. And then I want to get a couple of underrated players from you guys. And one of those might be someone currently playing for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Dave and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
What's up, Winnipeg? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Legal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Just announced for Rumors Comedy Club, Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy of Super Troopers.
Oh. Yeah, like that.
They're going to be at Rumors April 27th to 29th, so you can go on rumorscomedyclub.com and buy tickets now. Super Troopers 2 is actually coming out soon as well. So I don't know if you guys were fans of the original Super Troopers movie.
I'm nervous because I just loved the first one so much.
Car Ramrod.
Man, I went to see that movie at the cheap theaters in Northgate, paid a toonie, had the lowest of expectations. Dave, you remember Northgate.
Well, Northgate is Dave's old stomping grounds.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Well, Shawnee's in
That's
Northgate.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Ambassador Row.
Ambassador Row. I think you know someone who grew up on
Ambassador
Row.
Yes, I do.
Row
Naomi,
as well.
Yeah.
And I remember walking into the theater just being like, this movie's going to suck. Everyone wants to see it. I'll pay a toonie. Walked out and was like, I cannot wait to see that movie again. So I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, and there were some other good Broken Lizard movies as well. Club Dread was a good one.
No, they had another. What was that other one?
Beerfest was funny.
Beerfest.
Yeah. Beerfest was good. So Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy, very funny. They'll be at Rumors April 27th to 29th, as I mentioned. Dave Williamson is at Rumors this weekend, March 7th to March 11th. So March 11th is today, so that's his final show. So make sure you go to Rumors Comedy Club and check out all of the amazing stand-up comedians coming up. Sean Wayans is another one coming up April 20th to 23rd. It's unbelievable how many great comedians come to Rumors. Recently saw Jay Farrow, guys.
Yeah, wasn't he great?
He was amazing.
Yeah.
Did you go?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
I lost it when he did his Denzel impression.
Oh, yeah. Well, he has so many good impressions.
His Obama impression was unbelievable.
Jay-Z, Drake.
Kevin Hart.
Did he do Tupac Hail Mary?
Yeah.
He did that, yeah.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah, he did that for the show I was at as well. So,
did you sing? Did you sing along?
A little bit. I'm a big Pac fan, I can always throw it up for the West Side. All right, guys, we're going to take some time right now to talk about some underrated players around the league. Rob Volman, who's a very talented guy, you should check out his work, does a lot of advanced stats stuff. He's an NHL.com correspondent. He came out with the NHL's all-underrated team, and I always think this is interesting because, you know, it's always interesting to look at underrated players around the league. He had the following players on his list. Then I want to get a couple of underrated players from you guys, and they can't be from this list. Tobias Reeder, left winger for the Arizona Coyotes, a guy that's had some success in the NHL, kind of a classic two-way forward. He was one of the guys on that list. Michael Backlund, who we talked about in the first hour with George Johnson. He's having a career year this year with 47 points in 66 games. I thought that was an interesting one because Michael Backlund, you look at his stats and his defensive zone starts and how he is in the faceoff circle. He's been playing on a line, of course, with Michael Frolik and Matthew Tkachuk. We'll see him tonight centering that line. He's been getting some consideration for the Selke Trophy, guys. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy, a former first-round pick back in 2007. He struggled, if you remember, during the Brent Sutter years. But he's really started to turn it around and play some of his best hockey of his career. And another guy that I thought was really interesting on this list was Jakob Silfverberg. And he's a guy that Jets fans will be familiar with because he had a good series against the Jets a couple of years ago. He was an interesting one. And another one that I thought was very interesting was Calvin DeHaan, a defenseman for the New York Islanders. He's a former first-round pick, and he's a guy who's quietly developed into a very solid defenseman for the Islanders. You know, speaking about the Ottawa Senators, nobody seems to be talking about the New York Islanders. And they fired Jack Capuano and brought in Dougie Waite, and the New York Islanders right now are neck and neck with the Toronto Maple Leafs for that last playoff spot. So Calvin DeHaan, I thought, was also an interesting one. And then the final one that he had on his list was Jacob Slavin, defenseman for the Carolina Hurricanes. He's a top-pairing defenseman with Justin Falk there. And he's a guy that's put up some very impressive numbers for the Carolina Hurricanes. Should also throw in, actually, Corey Schneider, who I thought was very interesting because, to me, he's not underrated. He's a top goaltender in the NHL. I don't know if you guys have been seeing, the Devils have been struggling big time. Oh, so yeah, he's not having his best year, but Corey Schneider, Manitoba Moose fans will remember him. Kind of ironic with the throwback game coming up tomorrow, throwing it back to 2004 when Corey Schneider played for the new, 2009 when Corey Schneider played for the Manitoba Moose. So guys, now I want to get your underrated team, and not necessarily five guys, but just a couple of guys that you think are players that are underrated around the NHL?
I'm going to start in Columbus. I'm going to go with Cam Atkinson.
Okay, like it.
He is top 20 right now in points around the NHL. You watch this guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but my word, is his skating impressive. And when he's in tight, he just seems to make the correct plays and just doesn't really get a lot of recognition league-wide, I feel. And he's a very effective player for Columbus. He's been a really important player for them this year. And he's got my top one list so far on underrated.
I like it. Dave, who's your first player?
Are we going in any particular order? Or are we just I'm going to go – can I go defense then? I'm going to go with Jonas Brodin in defense on the Wild. And yeah. I just think he's – you know, the Wild – and, you know, everybody talks about Suter, and rightfully so, even though I even think he doesn't get the recognition he probably deserves just because he just plays a crazy amount of hockey. But – to me, Brodin is just part of that Wild defensive core that's just so good and has just made that team that much better. But again, he's one of those players who not a lot of people are talking about, I feel.
Yeah, that's a good one. So you've got Jonas Brodin, Dave, on your team, and yep. Sean's got Cam Atkinson. I like that one. Cam Atkinson's having a career year this year. Sean, who's your second player on your NHL all-underrated team?
Well, it's interesting, Davey. We're saying we're keeping together on the same blue line. I'm going with Jared Spurgeon. You listen to Bruce Boudreau talk about Jared Spurgeon, gushes about him, says he's their most consistent top defenseman all year round. He's 5'9". He's not a very big individual, yet somehow he's a very efficient puck mover. He doesn't really seem to get razzled or flustered in his own zone, which is so important, especially for a smaller defenseman who's probably a little bit worried about getting pasted into the wall every so often. And you just watch this guy, and he really doesn't make mistakes. His composure with the puck is incredible, and he can get it to their pretty skilled forwards up the ice in a heartbeat.
Well, Jared Spurgeon, Sean, was a sixth-round draft pick.
Yeah.
In 2008, 156th overall, and he's got 30 points, which is a career high for him. So he's been in that top four for the Minnesota Wild for quite some time there with Jonas Brodin, and Marco Scandella is the other player. Mm-hmm. Matthew Dumba has been getting some increased ice time over the years with the Minnesota Wild being the first round pick. Dave, who else do you have on your all underrated team?
I'm going to stick with my defensive pairings. I'm going to go with Roman Josi over the Nashville Predators. I just feel like Nashville, again, another team, and maybe it's the markets, you know, that, and that's partly, I think, what it is. As I think when you look at these players, they may not necessarily be underrated from the perspective of the other NHL you know, players who respect what they do. But I just don't think that they get the recognition they deserve, which is hence the reason why you're asking whether they're underrated. But you look to me and like a guy like Roman Josi, he's just so dynamic and he just does so many things on that blue line for Nashville. So, I mean, I would have Roman Josi on my team.
Yeah, his point totals are a little bit down this year. He did miss some time. He's got 39 points in 58 games. He had a career high 61 points last year playing alongside Shea Weber, but I agree with you, Dave. Roman Josi is a guy that, quite frankly, should probably get more consideration for the Norris Trophy, but this year we know it's going to Brent Burns. Anyways, Dave, who are some of the forwards you have on your list?
All right, well, one guy who's been a favorite of mine for quite some time and is Wayne Simmonds. And again, he's another player who just doesn't seem to get
All-Star MVP.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, the All-Star MVP is an odd. That was kind of a consideration I was trying to factor in. I'm like, maybe, but that is recognition, so maybe he's not underrated. But, outside of Philadelphia, I don't know that he gets the recognition that he deserves as the kind of player that he is. And, you know, I remember years ago they were talking about whether the Jets could acquire someone like him, and I was like, do it. He's a guy you want on your team. So to me, a Wayne Simmonds type player is I like Wayne Simmonds on my all underrated team.
What about goaltenders, guys? I don't know if you guys came up with goaltenders, but we just went over Rob Volman's team and Corey Schneider was on that team. Is there any goaltender that stands out to you around the league that you would maybe say is underrated?
Well, I'd go with Andy Ratta, you know, the New York Rangers. I mean, he's been phenomenal as a backup. And you know, with the news breaking today, I think that Henrik Lundqvist is out 2 to 3 weeks. He's not going to be the backup. He'll be the starter. And I think he's been really – and we've had Rangers guys on before who talk about how good he's been for that team. So if you're going to ask me for, you know, whether he would be an underrated goalie, I would think so. Maybe Martin Jones in San Jose.
That was my
Oh, sorry, Sean.
No, that's all right. No. I was going to say, does Martin Jones qualify? Like, or is that just, is he a product of a great team in front of him?
Yeah, you can have whoever you want on this team.
You can have whoever you, sorry. I was going to go Martin Jones. That was going to be my pick. just the sheer brilliance of what he's been able to pull off this year. I know someone in my fantasy league has him. It's just terrible to go up against him. So from that perspective, also, can we put Peter Budaj as an honorable mention this year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Peter Budaj, honorable mention.
And I think a guy to look out for as well is he, and this guy doesn't have to be protected for the expansion draft, but UC Saros. We talked about Roman Josi earlier, and his win-loss record maybe doesn't look that impressive, but he's got a 2.33 goals against average and a 925 save percentage. And he's a guy who kind of is the heir apparent to Pekka Rinne there in Nashville. He was a fourth-round pick in 2013. So UC Saros is a guy that I think some fans haven't heard of unless you're in Nashville, but he's a guy I think you also got to look out for. I always think it's fun to get, you know, underrated players from around the league, because you could easily come up with a list of 20 or 30 different players, right, from both the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. But it's always fun to look at, especially stats and what they reveal. You know, a guy like Calvin DeHaan, maybe he's underrated as far as what he does for the New York Islanders, or a guy like Sean mentioned, Cam Atkinson, who's having a career year, and he's a big reason why the Columbus Blue Jackets are where they are. Guys, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. He covers the Jets and the Moose. We're going to focus, though, on the Manitoba Moose. They're in the middle of an 8-game homestand. They lost last night. They've got a game tomorrow against the Toronto Marlies. So we're going to focus on the Manitoba Moose with Mike. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Two segments to go here, guys. In a couple seconds, we're going to be joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. He's down at the MTS Center covering the Jets. He's doing double duty, Mike. He's covering the Jets and he's covering the Moose. There's so much hockey, Dave. I don't even think you've been at your house this week, have you? You've just been sleeping at the MTS Center. Is that correct?
I've got a nice little cot underneath the Illegal Curve section of the press box at the MTS Center.
And, the illegal cot.
Yeah, the illegal cot, which is probably true because I don't think they want me loitering. But no, I think it was... I don't even know, as it's honestly 17 games in 30 days. It's nuts.
Yeah, you need to get some sleep, Dave. Rory, let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us right now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Mike, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So you're at the MTS Center right now at... Jets practice ended recently, and there was a few new line combinations. Mike, why don't you inform our audience on what they might expect for tonight's game between the Jets and Flames?
Yeah, Paul Maurice, I guess you could say he's got the blender out a little bit. Of course, a couple changes by necessity. Toby Enstrom, of course, is out on D, and Mark Stewart will take his place. We also learned this morning Ben Chiarot may not be able to play, and he's got a bit of an illness, and Julian Melchiori, who's played the last two nights for the Moose at the MTS Center, if Chiarot can't go, Melchiori will play for a third consecutive night. I would suspect he won't play nearly the minutes with the Jets that he has with the Moose the last couple of nights. And then on forward, of course, Chris Thorburn is a no-go. He got hurt in the Penguins game on Wednesday, so he is out, and Nick Batan takes his place. Nick Batan's going to skate on a line with Marco Dano and Joel Armia. They've mixed the combos up there a little bit. You got Andrew Kopp, Sean Matthias, and Adam Lowry playing together. And then on the top two lines, they've actually put Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers, and then you got Little, Laine, and Pro. So a bit of a different look. Paul Maurice just said he's... And I guess when you lose a couple games in a row, as the Jets have, sometimes a change is best. And we'll see if some of these new looks provide a different result tonight.
So based on what you said, Mike, basically every single forward line is different. And the only D pairing that's the same is Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, completely revamped. The one line, of course, that has been so consistent for the Jets in the last little while has been that Lowry, Armia, Matthias line. And even that's being broken up. So... there's a lot of change in the air, and I'm not sure, as he Maybe it's a sign of a team that's obviously still trying to find its way, because obviously shuffling the lines dramatically in close to mid-March is not necessarily the ideal. But again, some of it is out of necessity. Some of it, I think, is maybe out of desperation a little bit. There's also going to be a new look on the power play tonight. Saw this at practice yesterday, where Patrick Laine is actually sliding over to the right side instead of the left side. Paul Maurice saying this morning that it's just about having different looks. I guess, you know, this point in time, teams have sort of seen it all and done all their pre-scouts. So I guess sometimes you try and throw the change up and see if it might not lead to a bit of a different result. So lots of changes. We saw earlier in the week, of course, Blake Wheeler manning the point on the power play, and change is in the air. That's for sure.
Well, Mike, that's a perfect segue for me, because, you know, we saw change in the air yesterday at the MTS Center with the Manitoba Moose. We saw Brendan Lemieux, who's gone on a bit of a goal-scoring streak now, you know, switched up and playing on a different line. What did you think of Brendan Lemieux's game overall the last couple? And what do you – you know, you wrote a very interesting article in the Winnipeg Free Press about him, so maybe tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was actually revealing to sort of sit down with him, because here's a guy, and I mean, my goodness, hockey is littered with guys who were, you know, prolific scorers in junior who found the going not so easy once they hit the pros. And Brendan Lemieux, I mean, he wasn't a 50 or 60 goal scorer in junior, but he could certainly put the puck in the net. And here he is now with the Moose, and he's well into his sort of first full pro season, and he's at 11 goals. And I asked him, you know, what if that's getting him down. And I found it interesting that he's really not focused whatsoever on his personal stats, his goals, his assists. And so, you know, he said, well, the scoring has been nice. You know, he had scored in two straight games. That came to an end last night. He did get 16 minutes in penalties last night, showing, I think, the other side of Brendan Lemieux, maybe the one that the Jets fans anticipate the most, the getting under the skin of the opponent. You and I, Dave, last night we had a funny chuckle, because at one point in the game you had a Lemieux and a Chelios in the penalty box,
right,
barking at each other after they had a bit of a tussle on the ice. Of course, this is not Claude and Chris Chelios, Claude Lemieux and Chris Chelios, but they're two boys going at it. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But, you know, I've seen improvement from Lemieux, maybe not as dramatically as I thought I would, and maybe not as dramatically as management thought. But let's face it, Brendan Lemieux had a real tough start to the year because he got hurt in the Young Stars tournament, missed all of training camp, missed the beginning of the Moose season. And so by the time he finally got in some game action, I mean, I think everybody was a step or two ahead. And of course, this is his first full pro season. He's only 20. So there have been some growing pains and some literal pains with his foot injury. But I see him definitely making some big improvements. He's been a lot more noticeable. He looks quicker. His shot is right up there, you know, as strong as you'll see at the AHL level. And one thing that's always impressed me about him, just covering Moose practice this year, he's always the last guy off the ice. I wrote about this in my piece. He puts in the extra work, and he explained to me that that's a product of his dad sort of instilling that in him, that a little extra work can sometimes go a long way. And so he appears to be a guy who knows where he wants to go, knows what he's going to have to do it, and isn't afraid to put in the work.
Mike, you take a look at Kyle Connor's season thus far with the Moose, and things really picking up as of late, just, you know, to say the least. Lots of hype and exposure around this young man, but I think what's going overlooked right now is his line mates and how well he's been playing with J.C. LaPone and Patrice Cormier. I'm curious, just from your perspective, what's working so well between that threesome right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And earlier this week, it was actually a fun interview. I sat down not just with Kyle Connor, but all three of those guys. I sat down with the whole line and he interviewed them at the same time. I was wondering the same thing. I mean, maybe people don't realize this, but Kyle Connor is not exactly playing with a couple of AHL heavyweights when it comes to goal and point producers. I mean, Patrice Cormier and J.C. LaPone, both who've had very Cormier a little more of a stint in the NHL in his career, I think 52 games. LaPone's just had a cup of tea, but both those guys would slot in as fourth liners, not only on NHL teams, but they kind of fill that role even at the AHL level. They're not big scorers. And so here you've got Kyle Connor, you know, playing with these two guys. And I think that makes it even more impressive that he's been able to put up the goals, especially that he has of late, because he's not playing with two fellow, you know, big point producers. But what I think Lepon and Cormier have done is created a lot of space for him. Both Lepon and Cormier, you know, they play real, honest, solid games. You always know what you're going to get from them. Lepon's a tremendous score checker. Cormier finishes every check, real physical style. So I think with Connor, I mean, they've opened up some ice for him. They get him the puck. And Kyle Connor, with his speed and his skill and his vision, he's been able to take full advantage of that. And I also get the sense there's a real chemistry between these guys. I mean, it's probably an overused term in sports, but these guys seem to have some chemistry on the ice, and they seem to have some chemistry off the ice. I certainly saw that just in my chat with them, a lot of friendly banter. Kyle Connor called the other two of them clowns. J.C. Lepon said, if only Kyle would pass more and set me up. So, you know, there's lots of fun give and take, and I get the sense these guys all like playing together, and the results have shown on the ice.
We're joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Mike, earlier in the show, we were talking about some of the Jets' top prospects currently playing for the Manitoba Moose and whether, you know, we would possibly see them play for the Jets from now until the end of the season. So you're talking about the aforementioned Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, possibly Eric Comrie getting a few starts. Do you think that there's, I guess, a point in playing Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor at the NHL level, with the Jets pretty much, you know, not looking like they're going to make the playoffs this year? But do you think they should stay with the Manitoba Moose for the rest of the year, or do you think there's maybe a purpose in bringing those guys up to play a few games at the end of the season with the Jets?
Well, I really don't at this point, and for this reason primarily. I mean, you've got a guy already with the Jets that if he were down with the Moose, he'd probably be putting up a pile of points. And I'm talking, of course, about Nick Petten. And, you know, Nick Petten, look at how he's been used with the Jets this year. When he does get into the lineup, it's primarily on the fourth-line role. Yeah, he's got a little bit of power play time. He spent a lot of the season playing with the likes of, you know, Chris Thorburn and Andrew Kopp and whatnot. No slight against those guys, but they don't exactly suit the kind of player that Nick Petten is. And Paul Maurice even admitted that this morning at his skate, that perhaps they haven't put Petten with the kind of players that maybe leads to some of the offensive numbers we expect. So here's the thing with guys like Connor and Rossovich. I mean, if you're going to call them up for a late season look or addition, are you going to be playing them in the top six or the top nine? And I mean, barring some injuries, I would say the answer to that is probably no. So at that point, I think they're probably better off just finishing out the year with the Moose, playing big minutes, getting all the key opportunities. You know, Kyle Connor, of course, already did start the year with the Jets. He played 19 games, and we sort of know how that went. After kind of a strong start, he was down to playing just a few minutes a game and then a healthy scratch. And I don't know if that really builds much confidence in players to work them in like that. So if you're not going to put them in the roles that maybe they're best suited for, you might as well leave them on the farm and let them continue to grow in that sort of role.
Mike, you've been doing some really good articles for the Winnipeg Free Press. Another one you recently wrote was about Eric Comrie. And, you know, as we've noted, Eric Comrie's played a lot of hockey, 21 of the last 24 since Andrei Pavlik was called up January 17th. But as he told you, he would play every game if he was given the opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, he says it's not wearing on him. He's not tired. I don't know, Dave, you've seen the Moose as much or if not more than I have this year. I mean, we saw him last night. He didn't look like the same Eric Comrie last night, even the last two nights, really, that we've sort of been used to seeing. And I'll say this, Eric Comrie's been phenomenal for the Moose. When you look at his body of work this year, he's been tremendous. His last couple of games, I think he looks like a player who's maybe hitting a bit of a wall. And he got pulled last night. You know, he didn't have the best game on Thursday either. So I just wonder if he's, you know, he says he's not tiring. He says he wants to play every game, but I wonder if it's starting to wear on him a little bit. And they've got another good prospect here, of course, in Jamie Phillips, who they've used very sparingly. Phillips only made about three starts so far, and he's been with the Jets since mid-January. So, you know, are they going to use Phillips a little bit more? Maybe, but they really seem determined to give Comrie all the work he can get. And I just wonder if, you know, it's a long season, and he's played a lot of hockey, and it seems like, to me anyways, that it's starting to wear on him. I hope I didn't jinx him by chatting with him. He really liked where his game was at the other day, and he's now given up four goals in consecutive starts. So maybe it's my fault.
It's all your fault, Mike.
Mike, you talk about guys who started their careers up with the big club. Immediately, my mind goes to Brandon Tanev, you know, sent down this year. I'm just curious, you know, he was sent down. I think they used the term fine-tune some of the aspects of his game. You know, the speed and tenacity is relevant right off the bat. But what have you seen from his development?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there's a guy with the speed he has, even at the NHL level, which is so evident. You figure he'd come down to the AHL and it would be even more, it would stand out on an even greater level. I mean, he's been really good as a penalty killer for the Moose. You know, you notice him out there. He does have that physical element. You know, he's not a big guy, of course, but he does fly around and hit everything. The offense just really hasn't come, and it hasn't followed him really at this level yet, and maybe he'll figure it out. I mean, they've got him playing with some offensive guys, but I'm sure if you asked him, you know, he'd probably expect more out of himself in terms of producing, and it just doesn't seem to be there at this point. So is it a product of, you know, maybe some frustration with getting sent down? A lot of guys, you know, they might not admit it right away, but you talk to guys. Even Kyle Connor the other day admitted that when he first got sent down, and he struggled. I mean, he didn't look like an NHL-ready player when he got sent down to the Moose. In fact, he just looked like another guy out there for the longest time, and it's only in the last few weeks that he's starting to look like an absolutely elite player. So the other thing is, and I don't think the AHL gets enough credit, that the quality of play here is not all that much different. You don't have the high-end guys that you do at the NHL, but, you know, those bottom six on a lot of teams, you could swap them out with a lot of guys on AHL teams, and you might not notice much of a difference. So I think guys who think the AHL is just going to be easy because they've maybe had some time in the NHL, they're often in for a rude awakening, and I think maybe Brandon Tanev is finding that as well.
Mike, wanted to ask you about Quinton Howden. A lot of people were excited that the Jets signed Quinton Howden, being from nearby Oak Bank, Manitoba. He struggled a little bit offensively. He's got 23 points in 55 games, and I know he's missed a few games this year as well. He's missed actually six games. What have you seen out of Quinton Howden's game, and maybe why he's been struggling a little bit offensively this year?
Yeah, I wish I could explain it, because, again, there's a guy that and there's a couple of them on the Moose this year. I mean, my goodness, you look at what the Jets signed last summer for depth. It hasn't really worked out that way, has it? I mean, Brian Strait is another guy. And, you know, we see Melchiori is the guy that keeps getting called up and back down and up and down. I don't think Brian Strait's even on the radar these days to be called up for the Jets. And, you know, Quinton Howden, he did have a call-up, I think, very early in the season, if I recall, and got into one game, I think, with the Jets. But he really doesn't seem to have a lot of jump as of late. I know he's been banged up a little bit, and I think he's been playing through some injuries as well. And so maybe that's affecting him more than anyone's letting on. But, yeah, he's a guy based on, you know, some decent success at the NHL level, and certainly at the AHL level, you expect them to be a big producer, and it just hasn't happened, especially late. Seems to have hit a wall, and I think he's a guy the Moose were counting on for probably a lot more than what they've gotten out of him this season.
Mike, last one for me, and I think from the guys, is tomorrow's the retro game, 2 o'clock puck
yes.
drop at the MTS Center. The Moose are going to be wearing their retro uniforms. What is your best retro memory from the 90s Moose?
my best retro memory is as a father of my son, who's now 16, but when he was just a wee little one, I think he was three or four, he got to do the skate with the Moose thing. And I'll always remember it was Sean Heschka who sort of took him, you know, he got to skate around on the ice and with the flag and the anthem. And I'll always remember when he came back, my wide-eyed, innocent little boy says to me, how was that, Parker? That's his name. And said it was great, Dad, but holy smokes, did they ever swear a lot? So there's and as now being in dressing rooms, I can certainly vouch for that. And in fact, I coach my 16-year-old son's hockey team, and I could say that about their dressing room as well. So, but yeah, that was and just I was a fan back then when the Jets left, and we were. I remember taking my kid, and my daughter as well, and as a parent, and sort of those early hockey memories. I think that's probably a lot of people in this town, especially teenagers and kids in their 20s, that is their earliest hockey memory is the Moose. And so the retro night is a nice throwback to what I think a lot of a whole generation of hockey fans in this city. That's kind of what they grew up on, and it should be a fun day at the rink. Sounds like they're gonna have a pretty good crowd at the MTS Center, and hopefully the Moose can come out with a little bit better effort than their last two games.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, we always appreciate when you take some time and join us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we'll see you tonight at the rink.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, take care, Mike.
Mike.
Take care. All right, let's head to break. We went a little long there with Mike, but we always we have no problem going late with Mike.
No.
He's the man.
So as long as it's not a crime.
Exactly.
Yeah, as long as they're not investigating.
As long as there's not a chalk outline around our bodies.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I would say I may be guilty of is overeating as of late. So we're going to head to break, and when we come back, one final segment, and we've got a special shout-out that we're going to give
very special.
To someone who means a lot to us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So stick around, and we'll be right back. It's an IC Saturday. You're listening live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Final segment here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's been a good show, guys.
Really good. Flying by. Yeah. Nuts.
Yeah. Nobody really misses Drew, right?
Who?
Who? Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
Yeah. I'd rather see Sean here every week than Drew, to be honest with you.
Oh, didn't you get the memo? Drew's fired. This is Sean's gig.
We're kidding, of course.
Great Saturday.
Drew's going to be back. Our next show is going to be Wednesday night, of course, NHL this week. We should mention it is a Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Flames puck drop 6 o'clock, I should say. Hustler and Lawless. Coming up at 3 o'clock Central, live from Boston Pizza City Place. And then Rick Ralph and Friends has the official Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. And as we mentioned, the game is at 6 o'clock. We got to give a shout-out right now. And they got into town yesterday. Brian Grebe and his son Connor, they've been big supporters of the show. We've had a special relationship with them. And you can see the picture that I tweeted out. He's rocking the Illegal Curve toque. They're going to be at the Jets game tonight, so we want to give them a shout-out. We're going to hopefully meet with them and talk to them. And they arrived in Winnipeg, I believe, late last night.
6 o'clock, yeah.
Oh, so it was around early evening time. So they won the Ultimate Jets Fan Contest. So there's going to be a little reception for them tonight at the MTS Center prior to the game, and then they're going to be at the game between the Jets and the Flames. So really excited to meet them. The story of Connor's awesome. He's always been someone who we've followed on the show throughout his recovery. So it's a fantastic story. So we're really looking forward to meeting Brian and Connor. So that's something that we're looking forward to. I want to finish off the show, guys, just talking about the goaltending again, because God forbid we talk about the goaltending for another time on this show. But the Jets right now, 14 games left in the season. Connor Hellebuyck, it is confirmed, Dave, that he is going to get the start. When you look at the goaltending, though, and how the Jets' offseason may or may not go with acquiring a goaltender, what do you believe the Jets need to do? Aside from acquiring a veteran goaltender, do the Jets maybe need to move a draft pick? Or how do you see this playing out? Because we know that Michael Hutchinson is most likely going to be the goaltender exposed in the expansion draft. But in your opinion, Dave, the Jets need to go out and get a Scott Darling or maybe a Chad Johnson in the offseason?
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. I think they absolutely have to bring someone in. Like we as the perfect example, or the perfect answer is what Marty Baron said when we had him on a few weeks back. And he said, you need someone who still thinks of themselves as a one goalie, not a backup goalie, a 1A who is going to push Connor Hellebuck and teach him and motivate him. And, you know, we heard from Eric Comrie, Mike's piece, talking about how he worked with Andre Pavlik this season, you know, even though it was a little bit awkward because, you know, Andre Pavlik sent down, he's a veteran goalie, even though, and the organization wants Eric Comrie to really be getting the starts, they're still giving Andre Pavlik some, you know, there's a developing relationship between the veteran and the young goalie. And that's what Connor Hellebuck needs. Connor Hellebuck, for all his bravado sometimes in his answers, he's a young goaltender, really taking the reins of an NHL team at an age that most NHL goaltenders don't. So he can have all the confidence he wants in his skills, and I don't deny that he has the skills, but the fact of the matter is he needs that veteran. The team needs the veteran because the veterans on the team, if you listen to what they say, they're not going to throw anybody under the bus, but they know that the team needs to be able to stop those goals. And I think that they need to have the confidence in the goaltender, and if Connor Hellebuck can't get the job, they need to know that the guy who's not going to be Connor Hellebuck is going to be making those saves. And right now, they don't have that confidence. Next year, they need it.
Yeah, I think insulation is a big word. You need to insulate Connor Hellebuck with not only a veteran who can you know, pass along some wisdom and some circumstantial situations and things that he could pick his brain for, but yeah, I think you nailed it, Dave, with your second point there, that the team itself needs to believe in not just one goaltender, but both their goaltenders. And when you go out onto the ice and you don't have faith in your goalie, it changes the way you play. You cannot play as freely and as, I don't want to say the word loose, but I almost do kind of want to say the word loose in the sense that you're always worrying, if I turn this puck over and it's going the other way, I could legitimately cost our team a goal. And that weighs on a team, that weighs on the ability to play your own individual game when you're worrying about turnovers and the possibility of one mistake and this game could be going in a totally different direction. So just from a team's mentality and confidence, I think it's huge that they bring in someone to support the goaltending situation.
Yeah, and to your point, Sean, everybody who's watched the Jets this year knows that the goaltending just hasn't been good enough. Connor Hellebuck had a good stretch there, and he picked up a shutout against the St. Louis Blues and almost shut out the Colorado Avalanche. But then, you know, he had a pretty poor effort against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that's why he was pulled. But certainly, as a whole, the goaltending just hasn't been good enough. Michael Hutchinson hasn't started a game since mid-January. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think we're probably going to see the Jets make a move and bring in a free agent goaltender, whether that's via trade or free agency. I think we're going to see it. Guys, that's it for today's show.
Flew by.
That was a great Saturday show.
Big thanks to all of our guests today. Jordan Tutu, Chicago Blackhawks forward. George Johnson of CalgaryFlames.com. Pete Blackburn of Fox Sports, and then we just had Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press on. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Keener Jerseys, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. For Sean Asor, and for Dave Manouk, and producer Rory doing an excellent job for us this morning. Jets and Flames play at 6 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless kicks it all off at 3 o'clock. We'll see you guys on Wednesday. Thanks very much for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we sit together, the team will be all right.